Consider applying to become a KBOO board member if you want to help serve our community and put your gifts and talents to good use. There is a time commitment of about 15 hours a month for all board members, and you must be a KBOO member. To apply, go to kboo.fm and fill out an application, or stop by the station to pick up a paper copy. The deadline to apply is July 13th, 2019. We are looking for folks who love KBOO, who are committed to our community, and who want to carry forward KBOO's values of peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change. KBOO needs you. Apply today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Voices of a People's History, a movement of movements, on Wednesday, July 10th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Revolution Hall in Portland. Voices of a People's History celebrates diverse movement leaders by sharing their stories. Members of our community perform readings of notable speeches and essays from inspiring figures past and present, a radically empowering opportunity to hear the echoes of history in the present day. Again, that's Voices of a People's History, a movement of movements, on Wednesday, July 10th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Revolution Hall, 1300 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage, under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, daily soup specials, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Open daily until 6 p.m. More information is available on the Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning. It's the Supremes.
It's the Supremes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Old folks like me like the Supremes.
Yes.
even younger folks like you like the Supremes.
Yeah, I'm all right with the Supremes.
Yeah, Supremes
They're
are
pretty good. Yeah. Diana
Smokey
Ross.
Robinson, all those people, you know.
Yeah, yeah, Motown. Sure.
Yeah, right.
Boy, we're just the whitest radio show hosts you've ever seen.
Or whitest?
Heard. Whitest.
Well, you know, actually, I'm sort of, you know, not white.
Okay, well.
It'll pass.
Yeah,
I can pass.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
That's an old, dirty, old, horrible joke. Okay.
This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Program.
Yeah.
KBOO 90.7 FM.
And we're as serious as a heart attack.
Something like that, yeah. We're going to start today's broadcast with a quiz.
Okay, quiz time.
Beep. I hope you studied. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
The first answer is multiple choice.
Oh, multiple choice. You mean the answer is a multiple choice?
Yes. Yeah, you get to pick a multiple choice answer.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Wait, I'm not. No, now I am.
Yeah. When faced with abandoning conservatism or abandoning democracy, which would modern conservatives choose? A or B?
That is really hard.
No, it's not. You know the answer.
Oh, democracy.
That's right.
Bing!
Modern conservatives will abandon democracy before they abandon conservatism.
Yeah, I don't know about even conservatism as a valid... I mean,
come on. Let me go. You're harsh in my role here, man.
Sorry.
Right. The second question is a fill-in-the-blank.
Okay.
There are three primary methods with which conservatives undermine democracy. Can you tell me what they are?
Lying, stealing,
no,
cheating?
No. I'm much
like
more
that.
Specific. Tactics.
Tactics. Denying people the vote.
Yes,
Bing!
That's one.
All right. Lying.
No.
No?
No.
No. I can only think of one.
All right. Voter suppression. You got that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, making sure the wrong people don't vote.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Secondly, redistricting.
Oh, of course.
Yep. Making sure the right people have the majority in the right districts.
Right.
And number three.
Yes.
packing the judicial system to make sure that whenever these questions are evaluated, the right answer is handed down.
Ah, packing the judicial system.
That's right.
That's maybe why we have the Supremes?
No. The okay. Supremes are part of that problem, not part of the solution.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about that today. So those are the three primary methods.
Yes.
By which
modern... Why don't we repeat them, because I'm totally out of it.
Suppressing the vote.
Suppressing the vote.
Redistricting, drawing district lines in a favorable way.
Gerrymandering.
Gerrymandering.
Okay.
And three, packing the courts.
Okay.
All those three things taken together are a pretty effective cudgel with which to smash the edifice of democracy.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's working, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, very much so. And that's going to be the topic of today's show.
Okay. But before we go any further, we ought to identify ourselves.
This is
the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland, Oregon. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris, and we're really serious, deadly so. 231-8187.
So the Supreme Court last week finished out its term and handed out a bunch of decisions, as it is wont to do on such occasions.
Yes.
There's two in particular that I want to talk about today because they are of a piece of the dismantling or with the dismantling of democracy we just described.
Yes.
There was, however, one decision they reached last week that was a great one. So let's get that one out of the way.
Okay.
The Supreme Court ruled to protect vulgar trademarks.
To protect what?
Vulgar trademarks.
Vulgar trademarks, as in bottom wipe?
No. There was the company in question, the one that brought the suit, was a fashion, a clothing line called FUCT. I'm not going to pronounce that.
No, you better not.
But that was deemed, before this case got started, to be a vulgar trademark and was outlawed. That ruling was challenged. It went all the way to the Supreme Court.
All the way to the Supreme Court?
All the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court upheld the right of people to establish vulgar trademarks. And I think a healthy democracy needs vulgar trademarks, Joe.
I think it's almost irrelevant.
Again, you're stealing my thunder. Is this what you do?
It's what I do. I break up the order of things.
I'm here. Just give me just a minute to enjoy this.
Vulgar trademarks.
Persevere in our great republic.
All right.
It's a happy day.
Yay.
All right. Now let's get into the crappy decisions. Now we got that one out.
Okay.
All right. Two decisions in particular, and they are of a piece, as I mentioned, with the suppression of democracy by modern conservatives.
Okay.
They have to do with the census.
Ah, the census.
And with gerrymandering.
Yeah. I knew him well.
Elbridge Gerry?
Yeah, yeah.
If you did, you're older than I thought you were.
Well, 1792.
Yeah, Elbridge Gerry. Do you want to tell us who he was?
No.
The quiz continues.
No, I don't want to go any further than this. I'm too erudite as it is.
Elbridge Gerry was a member of the founding generation, a signer of the Declaration of Independence.
Yes.
One of only three delegates to the Constitutional Convention who walked out without signing the Constitution. Do you know why he did that?
No.
Because it didn't have a Bill of Rights.
Oh.
Yeah. So by all rights, Elbridge Gerry is one of these members of the founding generation, which, you know, we would be inclined to revere under normal circumstances, except that's not why he's remembered.
No, unfortunately.
His name has been forever wedded to the process of redrawing representational districts in order to guarantee a favorable outcome to one side.
Right. The original cartoon of a gerrymander showed a kind of a monster creature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Elbridge Gerry, the father of gerrymandering.
Boy, I'm glad I know that now.
Yeah. So, as you know, if you've been paying any attention to American politics, over the past couple of decades, gerrymandering has become a really big problem. And it's become a big problem because of, you guessed it, the Republican Party and modern conservatism.
Oh, surely not.
Yeah. It turns out that conservatives, who by definition participate in politics to protect their privilege, have done so with gusto, have taken command of state houses across the land.
Who's gusto?
Gusto is a... Again, you're doing it again.
I'm so sorry.
Okay.
It's one of those mornings,
taken
man.
Taken command of state houses across the land and used that power to redraw congressional districts, because that's how it works in this country. Who draws the district lines for the United States Congress? State legislatures do.
Right.
So that's why another reason why voting matters so very, very much. The people who control the state house eventually control how congressional districts are apportioned. Yes.
Yeah. Now, it's important to understand that in writing the Constitution, each state was extremely jealous of its rights, of its ability to control itself. And these compromises were done so that you could get a constitution and a national government.
Yeah, indeed.
And slavery.
And slavery, right.
Duh.
So the drawing of districts for partisan advantage, which we have come to call gerrymandering, has been with us since the very early days of the Republic. Both sides of the political divide, liberal and conservative, have indulged in this. But in recent decades, this has been almost entirely the province of conservatives. They've done it all over the nation.
I like to say so-called conservatives.
Why do you say so-called conservatives?
Because in the original construction of conservatism in English politics, they were not the jerks that we know.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, they had valid concerns. These people really are phonies.
In what sense? I know we're digressing a little bit. I want to hear this out.
Well, look, conservatives should, for example, oppose war. Because conservative position, never go to war unless attacked. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
These people don't care about that. Trump wants to take away a good, perfectly good atomic agreement with Iran, and all of his advisors want to go to war.
Conservatives and conservatism is a bunch of phoniness.
It's no longer what it once was. Let's just say that and be nice.
Okay. Well, none of us are what we once were.
Well,
all right.
It was that pointy little thing there.
You can make of that what you will. Okay. It's that kind of morning, as you said.
Yeah.
Okay, so gerrymandering. All over the country it's happening. Most egregiously in places that are generally known as purple states,
yes,
right?
Right.
That can tip one way or another in a congressional election or a presidential election.
Right.
This has happened all over the place. So this has been challenged all over the place by people who are saying, hey, it's not inherently democratic to draw districts in such a way as to guarantee electoral outcomes in perpetuity.
Right.
That's not democratic. And I think the most elementary student of American democracy would recognize that as being true.
Except
right?
Nobody
it's not fair.
Nobody studies democracy anymore.
Well, they do, I think. Yeah. It's not fair regardless of who's doing it.
Okay.
This has been most egregious in, as I said, some of these purple states. I'm going to give you some statistics here because it's fascinating. In the state of Ohio, which is one of the worst as far as this goes, in the 2018 state assembly election, mm-hmm. This is for the state house, Republican candidates received 51% of the vote. So a majority of voters cast their votes for Republicans.
Barely.
Democrats received 48% of the vote. So pretty narrow split there,
yeah.
51 to 48.
Where's the other 1%?
I don't know. I would imagine independent candidates or third-party candidates.
Okay.
Yeah. 51 to 48, a split of 3 percentage points. But in terms of who occupied assembly seats after the election, 62% of seats went to Republicans, 38 to Democrats.
That's an odd coincidence.
Not so much, no. That's an entirely predictable outcome.
Uh-huh.
And predicted outcome. In the state of Wisconsin, it's even worse. You ready for this?
Yeah, go ahead.
In the state assembly vote 2018, Democrats received 53% of the votes in Wisconsin, a majority of the votes. Republicans received 45%. That is a split of 8 percentage points.
That's significant.
In favor of the Democrats.
Right.
But in terms of who occupied seats after the election, Republicans occupied 64%.
Wow.
So they went from 45% of the vote to 64% of the seats.
Must be magic, huh?
Must be magic. Democrats went from 53% of the vote to 36% of the seats.
That doesn't seem right.
They went from having a numerical majority of votes cast to only having one third of the overall representation.
Gee, that just doesn't seem right.
It isn't right. And I've got more examples, but I'm not going to go into that. So this is the heart of the problem. You can see why this is a problem, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anyone
listening to my
voice can see how this is a problem.
Even people who aren't listening to your voice could see that it was a problem.
That's the kind of power I have.
Ooh.
Right. So these, needless to say, gerrymandering, partisan gerrymandering has been challenged all over the country. A case finally wound its way all the way to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, the Supreme Court ruled in a 5-4 decision that the federal government had no jurisdiction over what is essentially a states' rights issue.
See, that's the this is a constitutional problem written in order to encourage states to be part of this great union and have slavery.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Seriously.
That's really it. Yeah. So that was the first really really bad decision handed down by the Supreme Court last week. And it's of a piece, as I mentioned, with the next decision I'm going to talk about.
Okay.
Which has potentially even farther reaching consequences. So the right to enshrine gerrymandered districts has essentially been guaranteed by the Supreme Court. They said, states, do what you will.
Right.
As it turns out, there's a remedy, a non-court remedy to this for states that are willing to undergo it. There's a number of states who have appointed independent civilian-staffed commissions to draw legislative boundaries. They've taken it out of the legislative process entirely.
Ah.
And of course, you have some sticky problems there, like, well, who appoints the nonpartisan members of the commission?
Right.
Well, that, in my mind, is a smaller problem than the actual problem with gerrymandering itself. So there are states that have found a creative way around this and taken it out of the hands of the legislature, which I think will probably happen more and more in light of this decision that was just handed down. All right, so the second Supreme Court decision that stunk last week had to do with the United States Census. And here's why. President Trump, as you know, and I'm sure everybody who's listening to this program knows, has been pushing since his inauguration
pardon me,
to include a question on the upcoming census. The census is taking place next year.
Yeah, let's be clear. Every 10 years in the Constitution, there must be a census.
Yes, there's even it's even called the enumeration clause in the Constitution.
Right.
We must do this every 10 years. And the Constitution makes no reference to citizenship of the people surveyed. They want to
To count us.
I want to figure out how many people are here.
Yeah.
For purposes of representation and for purposes of the delivery of public services. It must be stressed. It's not just political representation that makes this issue important. So Trump wants to put a citizenship question in the United States Census. Now, this is not something that has been typically asked, particularly in modern times. It has been asked periodically over the course of the country's history.
I think 1950 was the last, wasn't it?
Yes. But even when it was asked, I did a little research on this, and we can dig into this a little bit deeper later on in the program. Even when that question was asked, it wasn't asked to everybody. It was asked to certain members of select populations. For example, large concentrations of sailors in port cities who are transient populations who come and go. Large populations of seasonal workers who also come and go. So the question was put to them to see, well, how many U.S. citizens reside amongst this population that's mostly made up of transient or seasonal workers?
Mm-hmm.
That sort of question. Never has the question been asked for the purposes of political apportionment. And this is a big deal. Can you tell me why?
Why?
The quiz continues.
Tell you why. You have to tell me why.
Okay, right now, let's just take congressional representation as our most significant metric here. Congressional representation is apportioned on the basis of population, not on the basis of how many citizens live in an area, but
how many
people live in an area. On the very, very the very sound basis that people living here are people living here and have to conduct their lives and have to move through society and do everything that citizens do when they live here.
Mm-hmm.
They have to eat, they have to go to school, they have to work, they pay taxes, they receive services, and on and on and on. If you apportion government just on the basis of who's a citizen, you're going to, by definition, undercount the census. We are going to get an inaccurate count if you count only citizens. And what's more, based upon those numbers, you're going to have an inaccurate base for which to figure out levels of services, right?
Right.
If you build a new hospital with an emergency room, for example, and you only build it large enough to accommodate the number of citizens you've surveyed in an area, that hospital will be woefully inadequate to supply the needs of everybody who lives in that community, many of whom mm-hmm. may not be United States citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes on and on and on. Every aspect of modern life requires us to have an accurate count, or as close to accurate as we can get, of the number of people residing in a given area. It just makes sense. And that's why we have never apportioned ourselves politically based simply upon the number of citizens in a given area. And we know, because of internal Republican memos that were divulged to the ProPublica and other organizations, that this question was has been deliberately inserted into the sentence, or the attempt has been made to insert this question into the census, to dilute the power of non-white people politically and to enhance the political power of white people. We right. know this because we've read the memos.
Right, and remember, going back to the original Constitution, African Americans were only, what, 3/5 of a person?
That's right, only 3/5 of a person. So you can see even from the very beginning why this was an important thing, right?
Right.
So if you take this decision in concert with the gerrymandering decision, you can see how bad this could possibly get, right? Let's say, for example, that the citizenship question gets in, and those are the only people counted in the census.
Right.
If you take that number, which is significantly smaller than the actual number of people who live in an area, and you use that number to draw legislative districts, then the power of non-white people and non-citizens is diluted even further. And the one-party racial ethno-state that the Republicans are trying to create becomes a reality.
Ah.
We are knocking at the door of that reality, which is why these decisions were so very important.
So what did the Supreme Court decide?
The Supreme Court said, no, we're not going to put the question in. But there's a big but here. The administration...
That's Trump's big but. No, it's
yeah,
not.
Well, yeah. The administration still has the opportunity to get this question in. And here's why. They came to the Supreme Court and argued that they needed this question so that they could better enforce the Voting Rights Act. Yeah. Yeah, that was the reaction
Irony.
Of the court. That was the reaction of the court, pretty much to laugh, because really you don't need that information to enforce the Voting Rights Act. In fact, an undercount of the census makes it harder to enforce the Voting Rights Act. And I think everybody knows that nobody in this administration has any intention whatsoever of enforcing the Voting Rights Act.
Right.
Right. So the court said, no, I'm sorry, that's a pretext. And we're not going to put this question in the census on the basis of a pretext. And the strong hint there was, well, come back to us with a better reason, and we might let you put it in.
Ah.
So this is literally a question of timing. The paper copies of the census were scheduled to begin printing yesterday. They have not yet begun printing because the administration still wants to get this question in there. Trump has indicated he might delay the census.
Wait, you can't delay the census.
I know you can't.
Every 10 years.
But Trump has not read the Constitution, I think, since he was in junior high.
I don't think he got past Dick and Jane.
No, I don't think he did. So we have our would-be dictatorial president wanting to alter the Constitution at his whim, conduct the census how and when he feels like it. And he might very well get his way, which is the scary part about this.
And that's because the Supreme Court is like 5-4?
5-4. And why is that, Joe?
Well, because we put two people into the Supreme Court, actually three, but two people into the Supreme Court who are clearly at the beck and call of the Republicans.
Right. And our last president, didn't he try to put a guy in towards the end?
He did. He tried really hard over and over again, but the Republicans wouldn't let him.
Right, because that's in the Constitution, right?
What?
That you can deny the president a Supreme Court appointment?
No.
Well, then why'd they do it?
To keep the court conservative.
Yeah, and it certainly has paid off, hasn't it?
It has paid off.
Yeah. So that's what we're talking about today. 503-231-8187 is the number to call.
That why I ironically ran the Supremes?
Yes.
Oh, good. I knew I had a reason.
Did you do it ironically?
No, I did do it ironically.
I think you were reaching for ironic, but you didn't quite make it.
I made it. I mean, African American, very good, very talented people coming out of a traditionally black city. Come on.
So, we have a political party in this country who is quite clearly aiming for permanent one-party rule, which means essentially the creation of a white nationalist ethno-state. What do you think about that, Joe?
Well, I'm not being much of a nationalist, and I'm not really sure I'm white. I don't like it.
You don't like it?
I don't like it.
Oh.
I think it's inherently unfair. And I think it's, and given that the population will be, and almost maybe is, made up more of persons of color and ethnicities different than Anglo, it seems incredibly unfair.
Yeah, it is incredibly unfair. I think a one-party...
And I'm being nice when I say unfair.
A one-party white ethno-state may have been what the founders wanted. We don't really know. But it's certainly not what anybody who is a modern devotee of democracy and representative republic like our own wants to have.
Well, right? Yeah, and aside from classical music, whites don't contribute much.
That was a weird comment.
I like to make weird comments.
I know you do. 503-231-8187. So there's a bunch of questions that are open now as a result of these two decisions. First of all, will the Republicans and the administration be able to come back to the court with a compelling argument to insert the citizenship question?
Well, given the way the court is stacked.
No, probably not. And it was really interesting, too, when the court wrote its opinion in this decision, they presented a version of history that was simply inaccurate. What'd John Roberts, say? Writing for the majority, and I'm paraphrasing now, I can go back and get the exact language, said that this was a return to a traditional practice. And it really isn't. This is not a return to normalcy, asking about citizenship. This is an exception. This is an aberration.
I think the last year they did this was 1950, wasn't it?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at various times, as I mentioned earlier, over the course of our history, it has been asked. Now, here's a little summation of that. This is from The Atlantic. Never in the 230-year history of the census has the complete count questionnaire or its equivalent asked for the citizenship status of everyone in the country. When citizenship was asked at all, it was directed at small segments of the population, such as foreign-born men 21 or older, which was asked in 1890 and 1910, mm-hmm. Or foreign-born people 1930 to 1950, mainly to figure out how well they were assimilating into the United States. After the 1950 census, questions about citizenship or naturalization were confined to sample surveys that went only to a small percentage of households. Now, those surveys still exist. They are still circulated. And that's how we get an idea of the number of citizens we have residing in the country. Because there's really no legal consequences attached to answering that questionnaire.
It doesn't make up, it isn't like a thing making up gerrymandering.
Yeah. So the court, in its opinion, acknowledged this change in practice after 1950, but it really misrepresented how things had worked up. It worked up to that point. There were multiple censuses during the early period, specifically those in 1840, 50, 60, and 80, that did include a census question, but didn't direct it to everybody, only to certain populations, as we just discussed. So this is not something that always happened that we somehow got away from and Trump is heroically returning us to. It's not. It's an aberration.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's disturbing to me when the highest court of the land, whose members, presumably, who are appointed on the basis of their outstanding judgment, their deep
and
wisdom.
Knowledge. Yeah, and knowledge.
And knowledge and familiarity with constitutional law and tradition and proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
When they misrepresent our own history like this, that's really disturbing.
Well, do you
me.
Think the early alcohol and sexual abuse of one of those people might have played into this misunderstanding?
It's entirely possible. I think the alcohol and sexual abuse aside, the fact that that dude was groomed from a young age to be a conservative pawn on the court might be a little more relevant.
Okay.
But let's go to the phones. Sherry, good morning.
Good morning. I have a question. Can you explain why the right wing, the other side, the very, very conservative side, how do you explain to them why we wouldn't want a citizenship on there? In some ways, it seems like, well, of course you'd want to know how many citizens there are. Why shouldn't the representative districting be based on citizens? We're the ones who were born here and we're the ones who vote. You see what I'm saying? So can you make a...
Well, let me, sure. I think you're asking a very reasonable question. The point of the census is not to measure people who can vote. The point of the census is to measure people. Do you see what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't matter in terms of the constitutional founding fathers and so on. They wanted to know exactly how many people were there, and then that would create an opportunity to give monies from the federal government appropriate to those numbers. It didn't
and
really matter.
Shouldn't that money go to citizens?
Not
why
directly. It goes indirectly.
Money go to non-citizens?
Well, indirectly, it goes to all of us. For example, when money decisions are made, they're made based on the general population. If for example, a state like Mississippi, which systematically excluded persons of color, needs HEP, as they say down there. HEP, I like that word. The decision was made based on the population per se, not on the basis of African-Americans versus Anglos.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, in Mississippi, there were large numbers at one point, large numbers of African Americans, still sort of true. And that state, wanted to make sure the Mississippi River was navigable, wanted to make sure the flood dangers were controllable, and so on. And therefore, the decision has to do not with the nature of persons vis-a-vis citizenship, but based on the nature of people around. You follow?
Well, yeah, I see that. That's just kind of a different story, though, because I'm talking about immigrants, and I can see people saying, people coming here of their own accord, not because they were forced to. And so I can see it with services. I can see it for hospitals and other kinds of services. But shouldn't our, I'm asking a devil's, what do you say that, being a devil's advocate?
Yeah.
Why shouldn't our districts be based on our citizens who live here, because they are the ones who vote? So why would we want non-citizens being counted when they're not going to be represented, or they shouldn't be if they're not citizens?
It's because the questions of political representation and apportionment, as well as questions of the subsequent apportionment of resources, as Joe mentioned, is first of all not the direct object of the census, but are not the only factor at play here. The census is conducted so that we know how many people are in the United
States. That's just people.
That's an important thing to know for a whole bunch of reasons. And in the final analysis, it doesn't really affect the apportionment of political power much at all. You still can't vote unless you're a citizen of the United States. So how we draw our legislative districts, for example, or how we count people, for example, doesn't have any bearing on ultimately who gets to participate in the political process. But it does have a lot of bearing, as we've been talking about, on other aspects of modern life. For example, say you want to construct a public transportation system. You have to construct a public transportation system with a capacity to serve everybody who lives in a given area, whether or not those people are citizens of the United States. If you don't, then you've got an inadequate and essentially broken system.
And there's another irony here. There is this mythos that there are people who are more eligible for citizenship than other people. It is made in that way because we forget history, and we forget the fact that we, except for Native Americans, are all people from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Native Americans, going way, way back, were people who migrated to this continent.
Yeah, and I was thinking, too, the big difference is one answer to that question for others would be, just because you're a non-citizen doesn't mean you're not here legally.
Right.
You could legally be here and not be a citizen.
Right. And I want to, just a little historical footnote here. There have been many occasions in American history where nativism became a major political force. Hatred of the Irish, hatred of persons of color, hatred of Jews, hatred of nowadays followers of Islam. These are all biased and unfair and irrelevant. You follow?
To the census.
Well, irrelevant to the census and should be irrelevant to the process. The only requirement for voting should be, are you or are you not a citizen?
Did that answer your question, Sherry?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, thank you very much for the call. And there's other permutations of this question that are important in this context. For example, let's say you and your wife, Joe, are fleeing, or you're from Central America, and you're fleeing an incredibly violent situation that you have to leave. You have to leave. So you come to the United States, you seek asylum, you come here, you start working a job, eventually you have kids who are born here who are themselves citizens.
Right.
So
let's be clear. Many people may not know this. If you're born in this country, you are a citizen.
That's correct. So along comes this new U.S. census that includes a citizenship question. You and your wife are not citizens.
Right.
You're here without documentation. Yeah. And if you come in contact with the authorities, might be deported back to your country of origin. So you're pretty unlikely to answer that census question, right?
Right.
Or you're pretty unlikely to take the census at all.
Right.
That means that your children then are not enumerated in the process of the census, of conducting the census, and therefore not accounted for when it comes again time for the government to actually serve its citizens. So those kids of yours who are citizens and who are going to grow up going to public school, they're all of a sudden two uncounted people that the school systems now have to absorb.
Right.
And if you multiply that problem by many, many households, you've got a pretty serious problem on your hands.
Mm-hmm.
It's important that we know how many people are here, whether or not they're actually citizens of the United States. It is foolish to do anything different. I mean, you can look at other countries for an example, like take the nation of Kuwait, not a nation very much like ours, but one in which foreign-born service sector workers outnumber actual citizens. Now, would it be a smart thing for the Kuwaitis to pretend those people aren't there when they count how many people are living in their country? That wouldn't be very smart, would it? It's just dumb on its face. This is an argument you can pretty much laugh away. Why would you want to embark on this enormous survey of your country and then come out away with a number that is inaccurate? And the answer to that question is because that inaccurate number can be used to disenfranchise some people and solidify the political power of other people. And they are intentionally trying to make that so.
Yeah, no, it's obvious. I don't even understand. I don't even understand the false argument that they make. It really doesn't make any sense.
Well, if you evaluate it in those terms.
Yes.
If you say, why is Steve over there? Why is he trying to make this, put the citizenship question into the census? And if you ask yourself, well, is Steve trying to create a white nationalist ethno state? And the answer is yes, then all of a sudden Steve's efforts make sense, don't they?
Yes, and something very important to understand. Pure demographics, apart from anything else, are going to mean that within yours and my lifetimes, that the country will not be a majority Anglo-white.
Yep, it's around 2050 when that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yep, about another 30 years.
Well, no, I won't make it. You won't make it either.
You might make it.
I'd be very stupid. I'll be old, like a stupid.
Like a head in a jar that still talks.
The talking head.
Let's go back to the phones. Kyle, good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind?
I had a question, because I think that I'm going to opt out of the census if it comes around. If there's a citizen question on it, at least I'm not going to answer that question. And I'm wondering what the penalties might be for me not doing that, or me just completely opting out of it completely as a protest to Der Fuhrer.
I confess I don't know if there's a penalty for either not participating in the census or not answering certain questions. I don't think that there is any sort of penalty, but I could very well be wrong about that. Secondly, I think you should participate in the census. It's a necessary and useful thing.
I agree, but I think if everybody lays their pencils down and says, we're not touching this thing with a 10-foot pole until you change it, things would all of a sudden change. We have to get together and do this.
I think that'd be playing right into the right wing's hands, because then you have an inaccurate undercount in the census.
Then it'd really be a mess. Well, it's already a mess, so we need to worry about that.
Well, you do need to. This is important. You do need, if you're going to, for example, argue for roads or dams or hospitals or schools or whatever, you do need to know how many people, not how many citizens, but how many people need to be served.
Well, they're not going to look at that.
Yeah, they are.
They're just going to put people in place that they want in place, and they could care less about how many people want what.
Well, what you're saying, I understand.
This is the new regime. It doesn't care. It's not going to do anything according to fairness. It's going to do it because they need contractors on that dam or something, and somebody's paying off somebody.
Well,
it's a nation of corruption.
I understand your feelings, and I even understand the intellectual reasoning of it. But it is a very defeatist and doesn't ever lead to any kind of progressive improvement. So I would actually argue with you that the right thing to do is to do the census. But, if you choose to opt out, so be it.
Well, let's talk about something more fun like the debates.
Okay, thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks for the call. Joe and I have deliberately avoided talking about the 2020 presidential campaign for the simple reason that...
Too early.
It's too early. It's still 18 months away.
Right.
And what's happening right now is a circus. So we're not going to talk about that.
Although there is some pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, but we're not going to go there.
We're not going to do
that. All right. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, we hear from Nader Hashemi, the director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the Korbel School of International Studies. And attend its flashpoints. Dennis Bernstein looks at what is being called an historic visit by Trump to North Korea.
Oh, we gave away the store!
Historic is one adjective you could use, yes. At 11 on stage and studio, D-May talks with Philip Cuomo, director of Coho Productions, which brings another season of Coho Summerfest running through July 21st. At 11:30, it's Art Focus with Amanda B. Clem. All this and more coming up today on your listener-supported community radio station, KBOO. And don't forget, Joe.
Yes.
That you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm as a podcast or on iTunes and Google Play as podcasts.
That's so lovely.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. So this is the Abe and Joe Talk radio program, 503-231-8187. Let's go to the phones. John, good morning.
Good morning. About white people and classical music.
okay.
Yeah, so
that may have been unfair, by the way. I mean, you know. Okay.
Well,
go ahead.
You've heard of Beethoven, perhaps.
Perhaps.
Yes.
Yep.
Recently I heard somewhere. So Beethoven apparently was somewhat Moorish.
Somewhat Moorish?
Yes, he was not completely white, according
well,
to
who,
his...
Who the hell is completely white? I mean, really, race is a
exactly.
social... Well,
no,
let me say this. Race is a socially constructed
about
idea.
About Beethoven, that he was unable to marry the woman that he proposed marriage to, because she turned him down by saying, well, it would never work, you're just too dark.
I don't know anything about
wow, that's
that.
A... Shameful
yeah, I was surprised too, but I thought
I
you
don't think
know
anyone
because...
should not. I don't think anyone should marry anyone who has a stupid opinion like that. Myself.
Well, yeah, he probably got the best of that deal anyway. But I thought you should have known that story, Joe, because I think you're secretly Ed Goldberg.
A what?
Ed Goldberg, the guy on the classical music, the disrupted
classical
music
okay.
station announcer,
who sounds
think, exactly like you, and you sound exactly like him over the radio.
I don't know what to say to that, man. Okay, listen.
I don't know what station's on sometimes because I don't know whether it's you or Ed.
Huh. Wow, I think he gets paid. That's the difference.
You know, they've never been seen in the same place at the same time. Maybe they're the same person.
That's what I've been kind of thinking.
Okay. Enough of this.
Like, hey, thank you for the call.
Andy Kaufman isn't dead. It's really Ann Coulter got a sex change.
Ann Coulter creeps me out, man. Even her name mentioned makes me all limp and sad.
Yeah, hey, it's perfect fodder for Andy Kaufman.
Hey, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. I love just how weird this show gets sometimes. It's a lot of fun.
I guess so.
Michelle is next. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning. I just wanted to make one comment because I never hear this aspect of the census discussion. 20 years ago, we lived in a smaller community in Colorado, and after the 2000 census, the population tipped the 100,000 mark, and the news was all a flutter. People were excited because Olive Garden was going to come into town, and they talked about how many businesses make business decisions on where they're going to locate and where they're going to put their investments based on the populations.
Yeah, that's
true. Not
whether people
are citizens or not, but I'm really surprised that that aspect of the census is never discussed and that businesses have not put pressure on the Trump administration, because supposedly they're a pro-business administration, that they have not put pressure on that administration.
Well,
to back away from the citizenship
well,
question.
We don't know.
They legitimately want to know how many people are in
right.
their communities.
I think you're kind of correct, but we don't know what businesses do beneath covers or behind scene. You know, we really don't.
Yeah.
And as to the Olive Garden, that ain't Italian food.
No, it's just the comment that, you know, large businesses, they decide, they have...
No, I understand what you mean.
...population on where they're going to well, add more. I mean, it's about customers. How many...
No, it's true. One of the main...
customers, they're going to come.
Yeah, one of the main original reasons for the census is exactly what you said. It was necessary to know exactly who was where and how many people that was in order to make very serious decisions to affect profitability.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a conversation I just don't hear, and I wanted to bring that into the discussion because I think it is another issue relative to the importance of the census to businesses in terms of where can we get more money. It's where we have more customers.
No, you're absolutely right. The reason why we're not following it is because it may be politically irrelevant. While it certainly is, in the terms of large corporation decision-making, quite relevant.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. There's really no end to the number of reasons that it's important to get an accurate count on the census, right?
And the founding fathers, remember, there were no founding mothers. The founding fathers really saw the possibility of growth and really saw the necessity of this as a spur to the development, the economic development of the United States.
Yep. And the census is the baseline for virtually any sort of statistical analysis we do of the population of the United States. It's how we know, how many members of various religious faiths reside in the United States. It's how we know where people are living. It's how we know what people's heritage is in terms of their ancestry. It's how we know all sorts of things. How old people are.
Right. And it's also how we know, how many people have indoor plumbing.
Is that one of the questions?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. See, it is it's a statistician's dream, really, because you get so much useful information that helps us evaluate what kind of country this is, who we are, and how we ought to go about our business. It's really essential to the functioning of a modern representative democracy.
Yeah.
So Aaron writes into the Facebook page to say, what if everybody answered they are not a citizen on the census?
That'd be fun.
That'd be an interesting protest. But I think it would be a problem because, first of all, we would get an inaccurate count then on the number of citizens of the United States. And if you combine that with the number of people who are avoiding the census because of that question, then it's just going to exacerbate the inaccuracy of this situation.
Yeah, I actually think that this is not a good instrument for protests. I think I think the important thing to do is to accurately as you can, truly answer the census questions.
Agreed. Let's go back to the phones. Tim, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Enjoy the discussion. And my question is about the gerrymandering case. With the ruling, do you anticipate maybe some of these more progressive states out west to redraw their districts in a more kind of fight fire with fire and draw more? Because I think there's some marginally close races that went to the Republicans. I think they just redraw the districts would be more locked in and kind of fight fire with fire.
Well, I first of all, I don't know the answer to that, but I do think, I really do think that accuracy, not ethnicity at all, really, accuracy in general is very, very important for decisions in the allocation of federal money. And I don't like to tamper with that because I think it really affects the life and welfare of the people.
I agree. You're doing what's I would guess is ethically right or morally right, but
it's also economically right.
Yeah, and I guess my point is they don't really fight fair anymore. I mean,
If fairness were your measure, we in bad trouble.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
But I see where you're coming from, and I have to say that there is a lot of angry feeling in many people about the way in which things are being run. And it's very tempting to go to jump, and I'm going to use the word radical, not in a political sense, but to jump radical here. And I think it's in this particular case, it's probably pretty unwise.
Well, I guess I'd have to think about that, but I always feel like the nice guy finishes last in a lot of ways. And I kind of lost my train of thought there, but
I'm going to let you go, and you can follow that train wherever you like.
Hey, thanks for the call. My take on this is I think it's part of this larger meta question going on, which is should liberals, should progressives, should lefties, get into the sort of bare knuckles political
tactics
that the Republicans have adopted for years.
Yeah.
And there's two schools of thought on that. One is know that our institutions and our norms are important. The rules are important. We need to continue to play by them. And there's another school of thought that says we're getting our behinds kicked all over the place, and it's time to get in there, take off the gloves, and start scrapping.
Well, and the answer to that, oddly enough, is demographic.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So to answer that question, should progressive states start aggressively gerrymandering? I think the answer is no.
If it's not
wrong for one side, it's wrong for the other. That's what makes this Supreme Court decision all the more odious. Because really, they should have done their jobs and said, no, you can't do this.
Right.
It's wrong.
But remember, the Supreme Court is stackable, as we have seen. And this is not the first time historically that it's been stacked, by the way.
No.
It's stackable. And we saw it grossly in the case of Obama's attempt to bring someone into the court when it was really called for.
Yeah, indeed. Shelley writes into the Facebook page to say, many white people are undocumented, too. Yeah, I think that's true. But I don't think those are the undocumented folks that the administration is concerned about.
And I might add, there's no way to know something like that.
Angela, good morning.
Hi. I just wanted to piggyback on a couple of callers who were talking about the citizenship question and whether or not to answer it if you're filling out the census form.
Mm-hmm.
And I did hear Greg Palast, I think, interviewed on Flashpoint sometime in the last, 6 months. And as you know, he's done a lot of work on voter suppression.
Right.
And trying to get information out there. And his opinion was, yes, by all means, fill out the census form. But that it is a valid form of protest if a lot of us, if there were a big mass movement to not answer the citizenship question.
Yeah, so, I mean, it is an option. I want to be clear. I don't know what the I'm ignorant. I don't know what the punishment is for either lying or not completing the form. I remember that when you leave it blank, somebody comes around.
Hmm.
Well,
but
that
I'm
would
not
be
sure
really
that's true.
It would be really interesting if it were a lot of people. I mean, it might be worth, reaching out to Greg Palast or seeing if there is a nationwide movement about it. I don't know. I find it a very interesting.
Well, I think you're right. I think it is an interesting question. And I have to say that there are a lot of things about the way in which the federal government operates that are absolutely unclear to me.
Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there, that it had been posed as a possible valid form of protest that might not change the purpose of the census form itself very much. Might not really.
No, I can see
process.
I can see your point. I'm uncomfortable with a process where I meddle with something that could be very significant. For example, our creating light rail, or our creating rapid transit, or our getting hospitals, or schools, or whatever.
Sure, yeah. I know. I mean, you might need to look into it more, or the more people bring up that question and look into the repercussions and whether or not it's even possible. It might not even be possible to get enough people interested to make it worthwhile. I don't know.
Yeah,
anyway,
and it also enters into the world of speculation, which I try to avoid, though not very well.
Right. Well, I just want to let you know, Greg Palast is already out there kind of calling for that. So
I think we might reach out to him, and I want to thank you for the suggestion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for your work.
Okay. Under Title 13 of the U.S. Code, you can be fined up to $100 for refusing to complete a census form. And up to $500 for answering questions falsely. However, under the Sentencing Reform Act of 1984, these minimum fines were increased to $5,000.
Ooh!
Yeah. So you're at your own risk if you want to avoid the census or answer
bucks.
It falsely.
That's getting serious.
Yes, indeed. Let's go to Carolyn. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm turning off the speakerphone part. I am calling because I learned, I think, correctly, that the Supreme Court decided that the citizenship question was illegal and not to be put on the census. And I then heard that the man in charge is waffling on...
You mean Roberts.
...having the census printed. Now, my take is that the business... interests in the country got to the Supreme Court judges and said, hey, look, we need this, period. And so the judges said, okay, it will be required to not have that diminishing question on the census. And that's my thought. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks for the call. We don't have time to really answer that very complex question. And I'm not sure either of us has adequate knowledge to know what the real thinking of these judges are. So I'm going to pass on it. I think we should go out next to a caller, Penny. Penny, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question. Hi, Joe. Hi, Abe.
Hi.
I have a question about in regard to the decision by the Supreme Court to send the send the gerrymandering issue back to the states because they felt they didn't have status or they didn't have standing.
Mm-hmm.
And are there no examples in history where that was quite sidestepped or over you know, like Johnson during the civil rights issue with busing, things like that? Didn't they step beyond you know, the state's rights and declare that it was a federal question?
Well, yes, that did happen, and it's happened more than once. There is a presumption in law where the interests of the United States supersede to some degree, the rights of the states. But remember, this whole system was created in a compromise that gave the states, as it turns out, enormous power. So yes and no.
Yes and no. And so who decides and when?
Ah, well, as it happens, the Supreme Court is the ultimate decider in these matters.
I mean, so a more serious situation and a more serious case arriving at the Supreme Court might get a different response?
Yes. I'm being shorthanded here, but yes.
Hmm, interesting.
Yeah, no, the system is ironically both calcified and extremely fluid. Sorry to say that, but it's true.
Okay.
It's both black and white.
Thanks for the answer.
Okay. Hey, thank you very much for
such
the call.
As it was.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Also, reading in the Atlantic, there's a quote from a man named Thomas Hofeller, who passed away a couple of years ago. He was a Republican redistricting expert.
Ah.
Let's see, that tells you how importantly they take this.
Yes.
He said that adding the citizenship question would, quote, be advantageous to Republicans and non-Hispanic whites, end quote.
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty obvious.
Indeed. And he goes on to argue that advantage would be spelled out specifically in the advantageous redrawing of political district lines.
Yeah, no, there's no question about the aspect of gerrymandering being unfortunately a part of our culture.
Well, indeed. And, you know, I even discovered in researching for the show that
you researched for
this
show?
Oh, I did. The very best gerrymandering now is done by algorithm. People are writing code to draw these district lines.
No, clever devils.
To best, enshrine the power of a certain portion of the electorate.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it's down to a science is what I'm saying to you.
But you know that we never landed on the moon.
No, of course not. Okay, let's go to Joe. Good morning, Joe.
Yeah, good morning. This has been a great conversation. I appreciate it. Wish there was a little more time. But I wanted to just draw a line to say that there's been politicization of all sorts of things, and it seems like it's just to gain whatever advantage can be gained, because there are people, and I'd say that on both ends of the spectrum, that see existential threats. And so those like us who might say, okay, well, climate change is a huge thing and this is an existential threat, and then you have folks on the other side who really run the other way and are grasping for anything they can. And I think this just continues to go down a really terrible alley, because just look at what happened with our own state legislature this year, where a certain group of Republican senators thinks they have to leave the state in order to preserve their principles and their power over this existential threat. So I want you to comment on that, and I will listen attentively. Thanks.
Well, first of all, it's beyond an existential threat about climate change. This is now science. We do understand the implications of it. The fact that this administration, and I think by implication the Republican Party itself, are in denial, and a lot of capitalists, incidentally, are in denial, not all, a lot, are in denial about it, is an indication of the foolishness of humankind. I don't think there's any reason not to do things, and they could be profitable, to make changes in the operation of machinery, the electric cars, et cetera, to develop light rail and so on. There's no reason not to do that. All that stuff can be very profitable. The problem is that there is an inherent kind of, I'll call it reactionary rather than conservatism, too much of capitalism, and it's kind of stuck there. This is less true in Europe, where social democracy, and by the way, that is not socialism, where social democracy has a more dominant force. We are the most reactive nation in the world. Oh, my, you know what?
Yep, we're out of time.
We're out of time. I really want to apologize for that, but I don't have control over that. And I really want to thank all of you for listening. And what we didn't cover is all our fault.
Good conversation today. Thank you, everybody. And we'll be back at you next week.
It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Storytime with Book Signing with Tanya Lippert on Saturday, July 6th at 1 p.m. at Books Around the Corner in Gresham. Tanya Lippert is releasing the book Goodbye School, where the main character Franny is preparing to move to a new school and saying goodbye to the old school. Again, that's a Storytime and Book Signing with Tanya Lippert on Saturday, July 6th at 1 p.m. at Books Around the Corner, 40 Northwest 2nd Street in Gresham. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. The Waterfront Blues Festival is the largest blues festival west of the Mississippi. The festival features more than 100 performances on four stages, including the Robert Cray Band, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Trombone Shorty, and Vintage Trouble. There will also be workshops, cruises on the Willamette River,